Thank you for listening to this teaching from Forerunner Fellowship. For more teachings or to subscribe to our podcast, as well as information about our congregation, visit our website at forerunnerfellowship.org.
Session 7 is entitled Axe Head Prayers. You go, Axe Head Prayers? The heck is Axe Head Prayers? I'm so glad you asked that question because I have an answer for you. Axe Head Prayers is 2 Kings 6, 4 through 7. And so if you want to go to 2 Kings 6, 4 through 7, because I have a feeling we have no ability to give you any verses this morning in any format besides the B-I-B-L-E. So go there, however you get there. All the kids, go get Bibles from all across the house and bring them in there. Bring them in the living rooms. Let's just open up the Bibles. We're going to have to go old school. Open up your Bibles to 2 Kings 6. And I just want to give just a little bit of a background on this. You know, this series has been me trying to share the word, me trying to share some of my early stories. And the reason I want to share early stories is I want us to be able to connect to them. And, you know, the way that this works is our faith grows and the miracles increase and the stories get bigger. I want to tell stories, a bunch of them, from when I was trying to figure this stuff out. A bunch of stories from, you know, year 1, 2, 3 in the Lord and some stories from more recently, but fewer. When I was in those early days, this passage had profound marking on my spirit. In fact, I can only think of maybe one or two other passages that had as much impact on me related to my faith walk and believing God for miracles than this passage in 2 Kings 6, and it's 6, 4 through 7. The story here is, there was a group of prophets, and they were building a house of prayer out in the woods. That's what's going on here. And they're under Elisha's leadership, and they're building a place for them to pray and prophesy and sing to God. And that's the context of what's going on here in 2 Kings chapter 6. And so I'm just going to read it to you real quick, because there's this really cool moment that happens while they're trying to build a house of prayer in the woods. Okay? 2 Kings 6, 4 through 7. They went to the Jordan, and they began to cut down trees. As one of them was cutting down a tree, the iron axe head, the iron axe head fell into the water. "Oh no, my Lord," he cried out. "It was borrowed." The man of God asked where it had fallen, and when he showed him the place, Elisha cut a stick, threw it into the water, and made the iron float. "Lift it out," he said. Then the man reached out his hand, and he took it. This is the craziest thing, okay? I remember reading this, I think, the first time, as I was reading through the Bible the very first time. And I remember reading this, and it just, like, stopping me in my tracks and going, axe heads don't float, they're made of iron. Iron doesn't float in Wawa. It just doesn't happen that way, okay? That's not how this works. And I just remember being so shocked. I'm like, what is happening in this situation? Now, here's a couple of things that I want to point out, because it's going to really touch the direction of this particular message. First, a problem in daily life presented itself. This is like the most normal daily life thing. We're not talking about somebody who's, you know, on their sick bed about to die. You know, we're not talking about one of those extreme situations. You know, you're about to get into a car accident. We're talking about the most normal thing ever. These guys are doing a work project, and one of their tools breaks. And then Elisha, this prophet, steps in, and he deals with the situation by getting God involved. He addresses this totally normal daily life situation. I mean, just imagine how many times we lose the tool, how many times the thing breaks, how many times in daily life something's just not going right, and it's totally normal. It's not like kingdom related. I mean, it's not like the end of the world. It's just totally normal daily life. Like, I've got a hole in my cup. I mean, like, you know, I'm drinking my drink, and I got a hole in my cup. It's that kind of normal daily life kind of situation that we're looking at here. This guy's chopping. He chops, and then when he comes back to chop again, the axe head goes flying. And so now he's just got a stick. And he's not going to be able to cut down a tree with a stick, no matter how many times he whacks that tree. And so he goes, Elisha, you're the project manager. You're the prophet. You're the guy with faith. What do we do? I'm so sorry. It was borrowed. I love that line. It was borrowed. There's this personal crisis now of a interpersonal relationship that this young prophet is now talking to the older prophet. He's going, that wasn't even my axe. I was borrowing it. I just broke, you know, George's axe. And Elisha just looks at the situation. He goes, oh, this is no big deal. God knows how to, like, fix this. This is easy. He said, where did it go? You lost it, right? Yeah, it fell in the lake. Okay, well, where? Kind of point over in the lake. And the young prophet points. And now Elisha goes, it's no big deal. So it says, he cut a stick. So cut a stick means there's other sharp objects there. The project could actually continue on. It means there's other axes. This wasn't the only way to cut down trees because Elisha is able to cut a stick, okay? So there's other, I mean, I just love all the details of this because it just means it's like so normal life stuff. It says, Elisha cut a stick and he threw it where the young prophet had pointed. He throws it into the water, kind of in the general proximity, and made the iron float to the surface. That's impossible. Then Elisha says, yeah, just go get it. Lift it out. Can you just imagine being that guy? You're standing there and you're like, dude just threw a stick in the water and magnetized the iron to float from 15 feet below the surface on the bottom of the lake somewhere to now float up to the top. And Elisha's just so matter of fact about it. He's just like, yeah, this is what God does. God's a miracle working God. I mean, you had a problem, right? Yeah. Well, why didn't we get God involved instead of just having a problem? Why didn't we get God to help us with the most minuscule, the most seemingly insignificant need, an axe head? I mean, I love it. The man reached out his hand and he took it. Problem solved. Guys, this messed me up. When I was 18, 19, 20, 21, I was messed up by this because I realized God cares about stupid stuff. I was like, God, if I care, God cares. Like, it doesn't have to be, you know, some major kingdom initiative. It doesn't have to be super important to my life and livelihood. It could just be I lost a tool. Something broke. It's just life. And that God would care enough to get involved, I took this as a personal challenge. I can remember the wild ideas that were running through my head. I was like, I'm going to do it. I was like, every time my axe head flies off, I'm doing it. And I started to think about scenarios that would be real life Brad scenarios of something equivalent, the axe head falling off kind of moments in my life. I just started to think about it. And I'm like, I'm going to go for it. I'm going to do this. I am going to believe God. And I am going to watch axe heads float. I'm going to do it. I'm going for this. It's in the Bible, not so that we can go, cool story, so we can go, incredible God, who is the same yesterday, today, and forever. He is the God who makes iron axe heads float today in 2020. And I knew it back in 2000. I knew it. I was like, I know this is real about you. And so I just got so excited in my spirit. I kind of like couldn't wait for something bad to happen. It was like, I just was kind of looking around like, you know, what's wrong? What's broken? I just start, you know, thinking about stuff. And so I want to talk through this with you guys. I want to share some stories. I want to get a little bit of expectations maybe set right. Oh, but guys, this is so fun. This makes God so real and relevant in the most daily of circumstances. This is where it gets fun. There's some lessons that we can learn here, and I want us to learn them good. Well, first thing I want to talk to us about, even before I get into stories, is that we can't lean on our own capacities. That's really what this is. This story to me is, it's like Elisha doesn't have like a magnetism superpower. It's not like Elisha just touches stuff, and every time he touches stuff, it just turns into a magnet. Besides, a wood would never attract metal anyway. I mean, there's so many things about this that just defy every law, you know? It's not about Elisha. I mean, Elisha does not have the superpower of magnetizing sticks to make iron float. That's not what's going on. Elisha, however, knows who does have that superpower. Elisha knows the guy. And that's the lesson. We want to get this. It is not about us. I want to give us Ephesians 3. You guys can turn to Ephesians 3 in your Bible. It's Ephesians 3:20. Ephesians 3:20 and 21. Here's the lesson I think we want to learn from this. We have to make God big. We want to make God big and nearly remove us from the equation altogether. I mean, if it's about you, there's two problems. If it's about you, it's an issue of pride one way or the other. If it's about you and how awesome you are, or faithful you are, or spiritual you are, then this isn't going to work because it wasn't about you, it's never about you. And if you make this about, I'm so awesome, God's going to do this awesome thing because I'm awesome, then you probably aren't going to see God do that much. The other side of this is just as dangerous if you're like, it's about me and how bad I am, and how weak I am, and how unfaithful I am, and unspiritual I am. You will also not see God move because it's not about you. The whole thing in this whole scenario is our part in the equation is just believe. Our part of the equation is just to activate what is already inside of us and then watch God do miraculous things. I want to read you Ephesians 3, 20 and 21. Now to him, to God, now to him who is able to do immeasurably more. Immeasurably more. No way to measure the moreness. So much moreness. To God who can do more moreness than you can ever imagine or ever more imagine. To him who is able to do immeasurably more than we could ever ask or imagine. According to his power. It's about him. It's about him. It's about him. Him who is able. Him who's able to do immeasurably more. According to his power. But check this out. His power that is at work within us. Us. It's all about him at work within us. To him be glory in the church. Now, God wants glory in the church. He wants to accomplish great things, great and wondrous things. He needs our participation. He needs it. He actually requires our participation. But we can't look at our participation as contingent on how awesome or how unawesome we are. It's all about him, his purposes, his power at work within us, which was a free gift. And it's not like we did anything to earn that gift. And so it's all about him. We've got to make God big or this thing doesn't work. It can't be about our weakness, how weak we are, and it can't be about our strength, how strong we are. I've done this 100 times before. I'm good. I can do this. No, you can't. Nor is it you and up to you related to how weak and faithless and, you know, all the problems you've got in your life. Neither of those are the point. We've got to make God big. Pride preoccupies us with trusting in ourselves. Proverbs 3:5, you guys know this one, but this is a faith passage. This is the same conversation that we're having. Proverbs 3:5 says this: trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. You could change understanding with strength, experience, you know, clarity, a friendship group, amount of money in the bank. You could change out understanding with anything. Don't lean on your own stuff. It's all about him. Trust in God. Trust in God to be God. Trust in him to be big. Trust in his ability and lean not on your own diddly squat. Don't lean on your own strength, understanding, wisdom, weakness, inability. Don't lean on you. It's not about you. Lean on him. This is really tricky for us, though. This is so tough because we are programmed to lean on our own. ... To lean on your own, fill in the blank. We are programmed to think about all of this depends on me. All of this depends on my ability, my this, but you know, my understanding, my lacking. And the Bible says, yeah, don't do that. That's actually a way to get God out of your equation. When you lean on your own, then that's all you got. When you lean on God, that's all you got. But it's God. You really, really want to only have God. That is way better than having everything else. You're either going to lean on your own understanding, wisdom, capacities, ability, and power, or you're going to lean on God's. And when you lean on God's, that's when God shows up and does the most amazing things. Pride also preoccupies us with our own weakness. 2 Corinthians 12, verse 9, if you guys want to go there. 2 Corinthians 12, 9. This passage talks about the other side of how we can avoid pride related to our weakness. 2 Corinthians 12, 9, Paul writes, he said to me, this is the Lord speaking to Paul, my grace is sufficient for you. For my power, there it is again, power is made perfect. God has a version of perfect power. Where is it found? How do we tap into it? My power is made perfect in weakness. I can be God when you recognize your part is just trust my Godness. When it's not about you and how strong you are, how weak you are. Actually, I love the fact that you can't do anything. It's my favorite. When you recognize that and you lean into me, you don't lean on your own power, you lean on my power, then my power is made perfect in your weakness. This is really good news. I can do this. If it's not about how strong I am or how, you know, whatever I am, I can make it if it's all about God. If it's God, 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 oh yeah, ask God, believe God, it's all about God. If that's the equation, I can do this. And so can you. See, that's the point. This isn't about super saints. This isn't about, you know, the really special ones. And this was Elisha just like totally in normal daily life. He didn't make a big deal of it at all. You notice how no attention he drew to this? It was like a normal Tuesday. He's just kind of, oh, well, where'd it go? Oh, right over there. Okay, here's a stick. Okay, yeah, just go get it. Oh my gosh. He made this seem so normal. It's supposed to be so normal. Because here's the deal. God is actually there. He was actually there at the work project. And Elisha knew it. You know, we sing that song, you know, don't let me pretend like you're not in the room, or I forget the verse, I'm, of course, right now when I'm trying to make the point. I can't remember it, but you all know the song. We have this thought process that we don't want to pretend like Jesus isn't actually in the room, but he's in the room. So to talk to him and engage him like he's actually here, as opposed to he's far away in a galaxy far, far away, he's somewhere out there. He's here. He's with us. So Elisha knew that God was at the work project. So he's like, hey, well, let's just get God involved. No biggie deal. I mean, he can do this. He wants the project. He cares about you. He cares about the dude who just, lost the friend's thing. He cares about the friend who now has a lost axe head that he lent to the friend. He cares about the relational tensions. He cares about the project being slowed down because now we're down one axe. God cares. So Elisha just gets him involved. We want to get God involved. And so I got stirred. I started calling these axe head prayers. And I would look at situations and I go, God, get involved. Just let's see you do the thing. Show up and do the thing. We want to trust in God's ability. I'll give you 1 Corinthians 2, 5. Another verse you guys know, one that I think we've even looked at in this series a little bit. But 1 Corinthians 2, 5 says this, related to trusting in God's ability. That your faith might not rest on human wisdom, but on God's power. See, that's where we need to get to. We've got to get to a point where our faith isn't resting on how much we know, who we are, how convincing the argument is, but our faith rests on the all-powerful God who can do anything, who made everything, who is so full of power and might and awesomeness, and that we want our faith to rest on God's power, that your faith might not rest on human wisdom, on human capacity, on human ability, on human power, that your faith wouldn't rest on humans. Humans didn't save you. God saved you. The power of God. We want to trust in that our faith would rest on God's power. And when it does, that's when we get to see God move. All right, well, I want to share some stories. I'm going to share a few stories here. And before I do, I want to point us to the beginning, to Genesis 1. If you've got your Bibles open to Genesis 1. And then we'll also look at Daniel 12 if you want to stick your finger in there. I want to talk this morning about mechanical miracles, okay? I want to talk about the God who made everything and who knew that technology would exist and knew that we would invent stuff that's beyond, you know, just stone and wood. He knew that we would figure out the periodic table. That was his idea. He knew all this stuff. And I just want to give us a couple of verses to kind of connect the dots. Of course, Genesis 1. In the beginning, Genesis 1:1, God created everything. He created the heavens and the earth. He created it. God created it. He knew how stuff worked together. He understands molecules. He understands electrical charge. He understands everything. He created everything that exists. God did. So if you want to talk about who's got authority over everything, it's the one who created everything. The earth was formless and empty. Darkness was over the surface of the deep. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters. And God said, "Let there be." And he starts with light and he goes on to a number of other things. When God says, "Let there be," no matter what follows that statement, it is. Let there be light, let there be life, let there be a miracle, let there be power. When God says, "Let there be," it's done. God said, "Let there be," and there was. I love that. I love that line because it says, "And there was light, and there was this, and there was." God said, "Let there be," and there was. Let's talk about the God who made everything. Everything. There's nothing that exists that's not under his authority, that wasn't in his created order. He created it. This is so cool. Well, if you want to skip over to Daniel 12, you maybe never put these two verses together before, but Daniel 12, verse 4, talks about, Daniel gets this little heads up about 500 years before Jesus, okay? Somewhere in that time frame. He gets this heads up that there's going to be this thing called technology that's going to get invented. And technology is going to change the world. It's going to make things go very differently than they ever have before. Daniel 12:4 says, "You, Daniel, roll up and seal the words on the scroll until the time of the end. Many will go here and there and increase in knowledge." Many will go here and there. It's talking about the capacity for travel. I mean, why even say this? Why related to the end times? Why would this, angel even communicate to Daniel this significant increase of going here and there? He's talking about airplanes and boats and trains and bullet trains and cars and he's talking about space travel. He's talking about the capacity for travel at a next level, okay? And then he says, then there's also going to be this significant increase of knowledge. He's talking about the internet. He's prophesying the capacity of encyclopedias and Wikipedia. He's prophesying the ability to share and do Dropbox and have the ability to give information, this incredible increase in technology. I love this verse because it's God giving Daniel a heads up that the end times, life is going to look very, very different on the planet than it does in Daniel's generation. He says it's going to be a generation marked by going here and there and the increase of knowledge. It's going to be something, Daniel, I can't even explain to you what a computer is right now. I mean, you'll never get what in the world, a FaceTime chat is. Daniel couldn't even picture it. He's just like, let's just sum it up. The angels go, and I know what the future holds. Let's just sum it up. There's going to be a lot of new things on the scene. This is a clear indication of God's intention of technology. The reason I want to say that, I don't want for us to stop our axe head prayers at wood and iron. I want us to continue our axe head prayers at whatever it is that might be created under the sun. If it's created, God understands, God knows, God knit it all together. God is in the created order. So I kind of got this early on. I figured it out. I was like, okay, it's not just axe head prayers. I don't even own an axe. It's like I've never done a building project where I'm building a house of prayer in the woods. And so I would either have to, make this passage mean nothing to me, or I'd have to figure out a way to apply it to modern day life, and I did. I'm gonna tell you a few stories. And then at the end here, I'll give you a couple of lessons that I think are helpful. So in 2000, I bought a car for $200. Now, if you buy a car for $200, you can count on that car being a total wreck. You could count it, we'll say it that way. Not a good car. And this was not a good car. In fact, it had been totaled. The car was totaled. And I bought it from the insurance company for the totaled amount, which was $200. They said, well, we say that the car is only worth $200. And so I actually had to pay the insurance company, and they then gave me the car. So I owned a car that had everything wrong with it. I took it to a friend of mine who is a mechanic, and he gave me a long list. He's like, this car, this won't last you 3 weeks. I mean, this car, it has every problem imaginable. He went down the list. He said, you need to fix this and this. He said, just so that it'll run for a few months, you have to fix this, 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 and this. And he gave me a list. It was like $1,500. And I was like, I don't have that money. I was in a season where I really didn't have that money. You remember where I had $11 for the grocery budget for the month? I was in that season, okay? And I own this car, which was a clunker, but it's okay because I got God. So I'm like, we're going to be fine. This will be no problem. I mean, it'll be a problem, but we'll figure it out. The car wouldn't start. It had a problem. It had multiple problems with its engine, the starter, the transmission, the ignition. I mean, there were so many problems just to get the car to start. So the car wouldn't start. And the mechanic more or less told me that. He said, I don't know how this car is going to start. I don't know how you're going to get it off my lot, you know, to get it to go. Well, I got in the car and I knew how to get it to go. I prayed and I sat out there and he just looked at me. I can remember. I'm like, you're not going to get the car to start. I just sat there and I prayed and I prayed and I prayed. And after about 15 minutes, the car started and I drove it back to my house. And now I knew how to get the car to start. The car had nothing to do with the mechanical issues of how it was going to start. I bought the car for $200. All of this was part of my faith journey. All of this was a gift, a kiss from the Lord for me to learn a little bit about how this whole faith thing works and how this axe head prayer thing works. And part of it is there's got to be desperation. There has to be a point where there's an actual ache and a cry in the heart to see God move and to believe it's all about his ability and not about ours. And so I bought that car for $200. And it had everything wrong. I mean, it needed new belts. It needed, I couldn't afford an oil change. I had this car for about 18 months, maybe 19, 20 months. I never gave it an oil change. I never replaced a single thing on it. I never put a dollar into it. And I drove it for nearly 2 years, 18 months. I drove it and it would never start. So I'd go out to the car and try to start it. It wouldn't start. A friend would try to take the car, you know, drive the car over from the house that I was at to the church, which was just a few blocks or a block. They couldn't start the car. The car wouldn't start. The car didn't work. It was a broken car. But if you prayed, the car would start. But sometimes you had to sit there for a while. And I just remember, I don't know how many times in the hot summer, oh, because the air conditioner broke, all four windows were broken up. So I would get to a stop sign or stoplight, and I'd open the door, and I'd waft the door to get a little bit of air in. Oh, yes, I did. Some of those around even remember that clunker. And it was a miracle testimony. For 18 months, I drove that car, and the way that I would drive it is I would get in that car, and I would go, God who does miracles, I need you right now. And many, many, many times, it wouldn't start for a while. I mean, many times. It would not start the first 20 times I turned it over. I would have to sit out there and pray and pray. And I just believed, if I sit out here and pray, you're going to start this car. And so I would sit out there and I would pray and God would start the car. I drove it like that for a year and a half. I mean, there are so many people that watch this, like, this is the most bizarre way to live and drive and whatever. But I had no money and the Lord had hemmed me in that season to not give me any money because he wanted me to learn something different. He was trying to teach me about faith. Okay? So I'm living at this intern house. I was serving at a church, living at this intern house, and I had free rent at the house, but I didn't have any other money besides that, and it was my job to keep up with the lawn. And so there was, you know, it was gnarly grass, it was ugly, and somebody had given me a lawnmower, but they told me when they gave it to me that the lawnmower didn't work. And they were like, well, you're going to need to take it into a small engine repair shop, you know, to get it fixed. And I was like, okay. And I wasn't, in that season, I was not, you know, walking around with my chest out like, I've got faith, I'll get it taken care of. I just kind of trusted the Lord and was like, okay, well, give it to me and we'll see how it goes. And in my mind, I'm thinking, I'm just going to pray like crazy. We're going to get that thing going. And so, sure enough, I get it to the house and it won't work. I mean, this lawnmower will not start. I don't know that it had been started in a couple of years. I don't even know. But I tried everything. You know, I put gas in there and, you know, got a fresh, you know, mixture of the two-cycle oil. And, you know, I did everything that I know how to do, which wasn't that much. And it wouldn't start at all. I mean, there was no, like, hope. There was nothing on it. I don't know matter how many times I pulled that thing. It wouldn't start. I said, okay, I know what to do. And so I got down on my face in that living room. That was just kind of my spot. I would go to the living room in that carpet. And I went down in the living room and I prayed, God, I need you to start this car, or this mower. And I prayed and prayed, and I felt like faith stirring up in me. Because I knew, like, I'm responsible to mow this lawn. It was kind of similar to, oh, Lord, that was borrowed. Like, I knew I had a responsibility to mow this lawn. But I didn't have the ability to mow the lawn. I didn't have any money. All I've got is this broken mower. But I had God, and I knew it. I knew God could do this. And so I got on my face, and I prayed, and I prayed, and I prayed, and I went out there, and the mower started. And then I had a working mower. Now, I think it broke again down the road. I know it did. Down the road, some, you know, maybe even the next season. I mean, but that mower worked from that point. I was told the mower's broken. I tested it. The mower's broken. I did everything I needed to do. The mower was broken. This whole thing, I'm not talking about this thing lasted 5 minutes. This whole thing went on for probably 2 hours. And then I get out at the end of the prayer time, I go out there, and now the mower starts, and I mowed the lawn. I just remember that was the happiest mow I've ever mowed in all of my mowing. I used to have a mowing company. Like, God, I loved this moment. I was like, God just showed up and fixed a mower because I needed it. I needed him to be God, and he did. He showed up. Well, this house that I was at, again, I told you it belonged to the church that I was serving at, and if ever there was a mechanical issue or a problem at the house, it was the responsibility of the church to fix the problem. And so I knew that. And I banked on that a lot. And man, it just seemed like in that season, I don't know, I felt like the devil was trying to make me look so dumb. So it's like everything would break. You know, I remember they got me an appliance, like maybe, I don't remember if it was the toaster oven or the microwave, whichever one they got me, as soon as they got it for me, the other one broke. And I was like, oh man, it was just so bad. It was like, oh guys, I just got tired of looking stupid and calling the church all the time to fix stuff. It was a bother in my spirit. I was like, I don't want to be a burden. I mean, these guys, they're looking at me funny when the maintenance guys, oh, I got to go back over to Brad's house and fix something. I was so tired of it. And the air conditioner stopped working one summer. And it started getting bad. I mean, it was like, it was one of those where it was like, it was cooling but not well, and then it wasn't cooling at all, you know, or cooling worse, and then eventually not cooling at all. It took maybe about a week. And I was like, oh, Lord, and I'm sure I threw out a bunch of, oh, God, fix it prayers. I'm sure I prayed that a ton kind of in passing. But it got to the point where this air conditioner was not working. It wasn't blowing cold air at all. And I was so hot and so frustrated, and I just said, okay, we're going to do this again. I'm going to get on my face on that gnarly carpet in the living room, and I'm going to pray, and we're going to get this air conditioner working because I don't want to call the guys again. You know, they've already been out because of the this or the that. We're going to get this air conditioner working, God. I'm going to get on my face and I'm going to pray. And so I'm 20 years old and I am on my face on the floor in the living room. And I'm there for quite a while. I don't remember exactly. I wasn't making note of how long I was praying because I don't even think that's the equation anyway. But I remember just praying. I was like, God, I need you to fix this. And this is after a week of it going worse, 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 now not working at all. I'm on my face on that floor. Go, God, I need you in Jesus' name to release this. God, axe head prayer, you know, 2 Kings, you know, chapter 6. I need you to do it. I need you to fix this thing. Oh, Lord, it was borrowed. I mean, you know, I'm just throwing out all those. I'm like, God, I need you to be God. I get up from praying on the floor, and the air conditioner works. And it worked that whole rest of that season and into the next year. There were no more problems with the air conditioner. I don't know if it was a coolant issue and an angel just filled it up with coolant. I don't know what was wrong with it. I do know, however, it was God. It wasn't a circumstantial glitch. It wasn't a, oh, well, you just don't know how to run your air conditioner. I am telling you right now, God fixed my air conditioner because I believed that 2 Kings chapter 6 was real and that God fixes air conditioners. And it wasn't about me. It was about God making God big, that God can do miracles. All right, I got another one. This one's fun. All right, so in that season of time, remember, I didn't have any money. And so if I was ever going to get in my car and drive someplace other than like right down the street, I kind of needed like money to put gas in the car because I had a $0 budget for gas, okay? I don't remember what the circumstances were. Maybe I was excited. I just remember I wound up needing to drive across the Metroplex. And I remember I'm over in Garland when this thing happens, okay? So Garland's a hike, for those of you who don't know the area that well. I'm over in Garland, and I was driving somewhere. I did something, and I'm on my way back, and the gas light comes on. More than comes on. It had been on the whole trip, but I'm just like, oh, my gosh, what am I going to do? You know, I'm like, Lord, are we just going to run on fumes? I need a miracle. I don't know what to do, and I'm on my way back. And again, when I got in the car and I started headed there, I just wasn't even thinking about the gas thing, or I probably would have been like, hey, I can't come to the appointment or whatever it was. But here I am, stuck in Garland. I'm driving. I'm realizing it's starting to putter. I pull into a gas station, and I'm like, Lord, I don't have any money. I don't know what I'm going to do. I am in so much trouble right now. The gas just ran out, and the gas, as soon as I pull up to the gas pump, it putters and dies. The car dies at the gas pump in Garland. I have no money. I have no gas, and I'm stuck at a gas pump in Garland. I go, oh, God, I need you to show up right now. I do not know what to do. And I'm like, I know you got me. I can find $2 on the ground. I mean, I can find some chance. I don't know. I just know somehow here I am and you're with me. You are at the gas station with me. And I go, okay, Lord, I need you. I don't know what you're going to do, but I need you to show up right now. And I walk back to my door for the gas pump. And I open it, and there's a $20 bill in there. And I just sat there at the gas station laughing my butt off at how did that even happen? I can tell you this. I have never in my life had that happen except that one time. Never. So it's not like that was a thing to do. Well, hey, everybody, let's just help Brad out. Let's go stick 20s in his, you know, gas tank. That had never happened in my life. That had never happened. And here I am at the gas station. Literally, the car died at the pump. I can't do anything. And Garland is a long ways to push, okay? And I go, okay, Lord, I know you're going to show up. I know you're going to show up. I know you're here with me right now. I just don't know what it's going to look like, but I know you're going to do something profound to fix my situation because you see me and because you're real. It's about how big you are. It's not about how broken the circumstance is. It's about how big you are, and I knew it. I go back there, and there's a $20 bill. I walk in and I give that guy the 20. I go, put 20 on pump 3, man. And I am just like so excited. He's probably looking at me like I was the weirdest guy ever. That was the funnest tank of gas I'd ever filled up in my life. And not only that, but back in that hour, $20 would fill up the tank plus a little bit. And so I actually had a little bit extra money after that. I mean, I probably bought a burger on the way home. It's like, let's just go back to zero. You know, I mean, let's just go ahead and even it out. That's easier than thinking you got $5 in your pocket. So I filled up the tank at this Garland gas station because God is real. God is real. God is real. God is real. The problem is we put ourselves in the equation too much. I'm not spiritual enough, or I can do this. It's all about me. It's not about you. There was another time this was just a few years later after that. I was working in an office situation. And my job was to run the office. And so I was on a computer all day. And this computer, I mean, I guess it was fine. I don't never remember it having problems before, but it all of a sudden started acting up and like it would start having a hard time booting up and it would like give you weird glitches and error messages and stuff. And, you know, I didn't understand how to fix all that. And it kind of kept getting worse throughout a day one time. And eventually it just froze up and I turned it off and it wouldn't turn back on. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm supposed to be running this office. Oh, there's all these problems. Plus the guy that I worked for was a friend. And I'm like, oh God, it's borrowed. You know, I'm like, I'm back in that mode. I go, Lord, I'm supposed to be fixed. Oh my gosh. So I try everything. You know, I do this. I call a couple of tech support, you know, things. And I try everything in the natural. There's no fixing this thing. It won't boot up. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I wonder if we've lost data. I'm like, how are we going to get this going? Plus, I'm trying to run the office and I can't do my job. And I'm so frustrated. And I go, no. Wait. This is the same as the mower. This is the same as the air conditioner. It's the same. And so I get down. I remember specifically, I'm in this office environment, and I get down on my face, and I put my face right on that carpet. And I go, God, just like back home, I need you to fix this computer right now in Jesus' name. I need you to fix this computer. I don't have the ability. I don't know what to do. I'm supposed to be in charge here. I need you to do whatever it is. I need you to release power right now and fix this computer. I got up and turned the thing right back on and never had a problem again. See, because God's real. It's not about me. I didn't fix a computer. I didn't fix a mower. I didn't fix an air conditioner. I didn't put that $20 bill in the gas tank. I promise you that. God is real. That's the whole point of this series. God is real. He sees you and he listens when you pray. I want to give a couple important lessons and we'll close out here because there is some balancing we need to do here. And I was learning the balance kind of the hard way. And so I really hope to empower you today and also give you some balancing that I had to learn over time and had to learn through misfortune mostly. Some important lessons. One, God doesn't think like us. His ways are not our ways. You know that verse, Isaiah 55, 8 through 9? You can find that in your Bibles, Isaiah 55, verse 8. 8 through 9, Isaiah 55. For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, declares the Lord. As the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts higher than your thoughts. What does that mean? It means, as a baseline concept here for our discussion, we need to recognize that God doesn't think about things the same way that we do, and that there are going to be plenty of times where we are misinterpreting a situation, where we are misunderstanding what should happen, what could happen, what God wants to do. See, because this isn't about getting God to do our will. It's about seeing God move powerfully to do his will, or even, I'll give you another term, inside the parameters of his will. Sometimes there's stuff that God's like, you know what? I want to do this today. And then sometimes there's stuff that God's like, anything within these boundary lines, we can do today. But anything outside of those boundary lines, we can't do. And some of it's not even sin issues. Some of it's timing. Some of it's, that's not what he wanted to do in that circumstance because he's got a different plan. His ways are not our ways, and it's important that we know that because we're not trying to bend God to our will. We're trying to partner with what he's willing to do or already doing, okay? Sometimes, and this is another huge lesson, and it's one that I want to tell you, I believe this is actually the main reason we don't see God do miracles. I think this is the main reason. Lack of patience. I think that's actually the main reason. Related to faith. I mean, if we've got faith, sometimes if you got faith at 100%, but God's not willing to do the miracle without patient prayer, and you just charge right in there and try to do the one-off, even if you got faith at a level 10, if God's wanting patience in the midst of it, if he's wanting faithfulness in prayer, if he's wanting you to contend, and there are times where he does. You know, there are times where, back in these stories, I'm giving you the final victory moments, but I'm not telling you how long I prayed. Because sometimes it was short and sometimes it was painfully long. But when you don't have any other option, where are you gonna go? What are you gonna do? When you don't have any other option, it's just God or broke, you know, God or bust. Well, then it really doesn't matter if it takes 5 minutes or 5 hours. But I think there's something about this patience thing that's super important because sometimes God wants to wait for a process to happen in our heart, for a process to happen in our faith, for a process to happen in our prayers. And if we cut that short, there are times where God is willing to do something, but we're the ones that cut it short because we weren't willing to pray long enough or pray fervent enough or pray, you know, deep enough in our soul. The subject of prayer and how we engage with God, I don't understand it all. There's not a magic equation, but I just want to say this. His ways aren't our ways, and there are prayers he absolutely will answer, but it requires you to pay a price you don't want to pay. You have to sit there. What if you had to sit there on your face for 2 hours instead of for 2 minutes? What if God would answer the prayer if it was 2 hours, but you don't know? Because he doesn't tell you, this is a 2-hour one. This is a 2-minute one. You don't even know. So it's part of the dialogue of, God, would you do this for me? Would you, If I sit here long enough, will you answer this prayer? Like, part of this is the communication of us getting to know God and his ways and his leadership. And I want to tell you part of the way that we know whether God, whether we have permission or not, is we just ask him, Lord, can I press in for this one and see you do it? Or is this just like, you're not going to do this one? I want to tell you, there's some stuff he won't do. There's stuff that's out of bounds. It's out of bounds because if he did that miracle, it affects this other person in a way you can't understand. That's not a good thing. If he did this miracle, it puffs up your pride right now in a moment that's not healthy for you. His ways aren't our ways. He's playing 10-dimensional chess. He's working so many different angles. He's got so much clarity. So one of the things I do is I go, I kind of like, huh? Huh? Like, is this one that I can? And sometimes I feel the Lord like, no, don't do that. I'm so grateful to start asking those questions or that I began, because I don't know how many times, friends, I pressed in and it didn't happen. And I had to wrestle through. I mean, I'm not talking about a few times. I mean 100 times. I've got a bunch of stories. I have way more stories where it didn't happen. Way more stories. But don't you want some stories? What if you had to have 50 stories where it didn't work to get one that it did, but then you have a story for the rest of your life? That God put a $20 bill in your gas tank. That God fixed the air conditioner. That God fixed the mower. That God fixed the computer. What if you had to have all these stories of fighting through and then going back and going, was this one of those where I didn't ask you, you didn't even want to do this at all? Is this one of those where I just didn't have enough faith? Is this one of those I didn't pray long enough? I don't have that equation figured out. I don't even know that it works exactly that way. He's a God of relationship. But if we're in relationship with him, we can ask him for permission for stuff. And there are times where I've heard the Lord say, yeah, no, I'm not going to do that. There are times where I've heard the Lord say, yeah, and I'll pray and it happens. There are also times where I've heard the Lord, I'll go, Lord, can I do this? Can I pray? And I kind of feel the Lord like, well, I don't know. What do you want to do here? And I know that's an invitation, but I also know it's going to be one I'm going to have to pay for. It's going to be one of those, this is not going to be a 2-second prayer and we're good to go. I want to share the backside of this as I finish up here. That mower broke the next season. So it worked all that season. It was pretty awesome. Every time I'm mowing, I've got a mower that God supernaturally fixed. It was awesome. Well, the next year, it broke again, or broke, or whatever, however you want to say all that. Maybe even at the end of that season, it broke. But now it's the next mowing season, and I need to mow the lawn again. And I'm like, okay, I know how to do this. See, I lean on my own understanding. I know how to do this. I just pray like crazy, and God's going to fix the mower. So I pray like crazy, and that's not working. So then I go, okay, you know what? I'm going to get two of my young disciples that I'm training right now in this season. I'm teaching them some of this stuff. I'm going to get them to fast with me. They've never fasted before in their life. They're teenagers. You know, they're you know, 17, 16 years old. I go, why don't you fast all day, both of you, and then meet me over at my house at 5 o'clock, and we're going to get on our face, and we're going to pray, and we're going to watch God fix this mower just like he did last season. You come on over to my house. We're going to do it. They fasted. They came. They're like, we've never fasted before. This was awesome. We can't believe it. God moved in our lives. We fasted. This was so cool. We get on our face. We're out there in the hot. We were doing face on the concrete, on the hot concrete. We were like going for it. We weren't on the mamsy-pamsy carpet in the air-conditioned house. We were out there on the concrete after not eating all day going, God, fix the mower. They're going, God, fix Brad's mower. He needs the mower. We're praying. That thing didn't fix. We put in all we had. And it didn't fix. And this was one of those moments where I learned a little bit about trying to enter God into the conversation instead of trying to bend him to my will. We got done and they left pretty discouraged. I mean, encouraged that they like fasted for the first time. That was cool. But they left kind of discouraged and I'm confused. I was like, Lord, what happened? And I just felt the Lord like, you didn't ask me how I wanted to do this. You just said, we're going to. And really, there's a lot of pride in me at that point. I know how to do this. I know how to get the mower going. And I felt like the Lord said, I'll take care of the mower, but you didn't ask me how. And without me saying anything to anybody, within a week, someone gave me money, and I think even picked the mower up and took it to a small engine repair shop, paid for it to get fixed, and brought it back to me. So I had a working mower that I didn't have to do anything for. but God didn't do it the way that I wanted him to. He didn't even do it the way that he did last year. See, he's in the conversation. So it's not just, I'm going to make this happen. I'm the man of power for the hour. We've got to talk to him. But I'm telling you, he wants to do miracles. And honestly, I would have way rather heard the Lord go, hey, just give it a week. I'll take care of it. Even not tell me what he was going to do. Hey, just give it a week. Just wait. I would have way rather done that than had to fast that day and not eat and then been out on the high. I think I had a sunburn on my head from the concrete, you know, and these two disheartened disciples. And I mean, I would have way rather not gone through all that headache and hassle, and I still would have had the miracle because God fixed the mower. He just used somebody's generosity, and he used a guy that knows how to fix mowers to fix a mower. Well, that's just as good. I mean, that's great. God did it. God gets the glory either way. We've got to engage him. And so I want to balance this faith for axe head prayers with, let's remember, we're not rubbing a genie lamp. We're talking to God. What do you want to do? What do I have permission to believe for? How do you want to accomplish this? And we can start to see God do some crazy stuff. But again, there's going to be times where he's going to give you permission and it might cost you more than you want. When I say that, I mean, you might have to pray a lot. You might have to really pray and not just a 5-minute prayer. You might really have to lay into the thing, and that's okay too. And then there's times where he just does it. Then there's times where he won't do it, and you're gonna presume, and you're going to have to learn these lessons. I'm telling you the lessons ahead of time. You're still going to have to learn them because you're going to have to figure out, how does God speak to you? How does God want to do this? But I want to tell you this. He is the same God who fixed my mower, who fixed my air conditioner, who magnetized a stick to an axe head. He is the same God today for you. He is the same God today. You just need to engage him in the conversation and figure out what miracles are waiting for you even this week.
This concludes this teaching from Forerunner Fellowship. For more information about our congregation, visit forerunnerfellowship.org. Thank you.